From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For a long time, podcasts were kind of a pain, kind of obscure, kind of unpopular. No more. A decade after we first heard the word, podcasts are all over the place, really taking off in all kinds of directions. It's looking like a golden age of audio. What does this mean for listening, for news, for entertainment, for radio, for public radio? This hour On Point, we're all about the podcast. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you in the surging podcast listening audience? Tell us what you love, and how has it changed when and where and the way you listen? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Julia Turner, editor-in-chief of Slate. Slate has been a big podcast generator itself. You can hear Julia on Slate's Culture Gabfest podcast. Julia Turner, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us from New York is Nicholas Kwa, writer and creator of Hot Pod, a weekly newsletter all about podcasts. Nick Kwa, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Julia, it's been a long time, many years of podcasts. I know Serial made a big splash last fall, but it can't all be just one wonderful long series. What is suddenly pushing the numbers up, the attention up, the heat up under podcasts, Julia?
Well, I think that one thing that people are really looking for in this scattered media landscape where we're doing so much of our news consumption and cultural consumption through social media and we're jumping about and we're getting a little bit here and a little bit there is deep engagement where you're not distracted by a thousand other things. And the audio experience, whether for radio or podcasting, is really dedicated and focused. You can have kind of an ongoing, continuous stream of thought coming into your head. And it's almost serene compared to some of the other media options out there. And I think that has a lot to do with its appeal.
I mean, radio loves audio. And for a long time, it sort of had a monopoly on that, Nick. But now, it certainly does not. It's so easy to get podcasts. It's not clunky to download them and mess around with them like it used to be. You can stream them right off of many websites. What are the numbers showing here today, Nicholas Kwa, on radio listenership versus podcast listenership?
So the podcasting industry and listenership in general has been growing pretty consistently over the past 10 years since its inception, actually. There's a Nielsen research report that is frequently cited in the media when they were first reporting on Serial that shows a 25% increase year over year. And that's reflected in the kind of underground but steadily solidifying subculture that's forming around this sort of new distribution model for audio. Personally speaking, as a person who's consumed it for quite some time now, it's a little bit of a no surprise that this kind of boom is happening. It was bound to happen.
Yet there's headlines all over the place talking about how podcasts were sort of, yes, they crept along, but the enthusiasm waned at one point, and the numbers lately really strong and lots of buzz again. Julia, I'm looking at something like, 250 million radio listeners? It's a huge number. 40 million or something like that, podcast listeners. How are you at Slate thinking about those numbers going forward, Julia? Where do the lines cross, or do they?
I mean, I think the real way to think about podcasting is that it's a DVR for your radio. You know, it's not necessarily a medium in and of itself with its own aesthetic forms. It's basically a technology that allows you to time shift your radio listening. And it's a change in technology that will affect the form and affect the kinds of work that's produced and affect what people listen to. But basically what it means is, if I love your show but I can't tune in at the moment that it's on, I can listen later. I can listen at 1 a.m. when I'm folding laundry, or I can listen on a, you know, Sunday afternoon when I'm walking the dog in the park. I can decide when I want to listen to what I want and take it with me. And, you know, 40 million listeners versus a much larger radio audience. I mean, radio is still huge. It's much bigger. Podcasting, for all that there's a boom and a renaissance and a golden age and whatever other encomia you want to throw at it, it's small. It's growing. It's the upstart still, even if it's looking like a hardier upstart than it did, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But I think, as we've seen with the time shifting on TV, people are really coming to expect this customization and convenience in their media experiences. And as the technology around podcasting is getting better, you know, it used to be you'd have to plug your phone into your computer and then sync it to your iTunes, and were you on a Mac or a PC? Like, the number of steps you had to go through to get the interesting audio onto your phone was pretty technologically complicated. interested. And, you know, in my case, when I started doing this culture podcast 5 or 6 years ago, like, it took a few years before I could convince my parents to listen to it, to figure out how to listen to it, right? They thought I was, like, going into a closet with a microphone, right. Didn't know what the hell I was doing for a few years.
Right.
And eventually I got them on board. Now it's really easy. Like, over Christmas, I just, like, you know, popped it up on my aunt's phone in 2 seconds, and it could download wirelessly. She doesn't have to plug into anything. And now, you know, the podcast is there on her phone if she wants to discover it. So I think the technology is improving, although it's not as good as we'd like it to be. I think pretty soon we're going to start seeing it more built into car dashboards. And, you know, once it becomes really seamless to listen to podcasts in the car, which is still, I think, a big province of regular terrestrial radio listening, we'll see those numbers explode.
Nick, here at On Point, I mean, we've seen this for years now. Listeners show up all over the place. We're on, I don't know, something like 300 markets around the country on radio. Mm-hmm. We know where those are. But then suddenly you've got listeners all over the world. And, you know, Iceland and Switzerland and Saudi Arabia and all over South Korea and China, and you name it, not to mention all over the United States, whether you're doing it out of the Julia's closet that her parents wonder what she's doing in there, or doing it out of a studio, it makes the whole world available.
Absolutely. It's a reflection of, I mean, not to sound too techno-utopian about it, but it is a reflection about the internet, sort of how it's expanding distribution points and how it's reducing barriers to entry for people working in audio, people working in radio, to sort of really put really interesting things out there. There was a really interesting tweet put out yesterday by the creators of the Welcome to Nightville podcast, which is extremely popular, and it's growing incredibly strongly the past couple of months, even years. And they made a point in the tweet to say that, thanks so much for all the business partners that sort of extending the opportunities for distribution, but, you know, no thanks, we already have the internet. And that's a reflection of how, you know, people are able to, or new podcast producers are able to sort of take advantage of these new funnels to really access people who otherwise would have been dependent on a much larger, much more sort of hierarchical means of distribution.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's remarkable, honestly.
You don't need a big studio. You do not need a radio tower. Just put it together and it can become very popular. Welcome to Night Vale is, here's a little clip. This is from 2012. Welcome to Night Vale, sort of creepy radio dispatches, very magnetic, from a fictional town where strange things happen. Created back in 2012 by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner. It's published by Commonplace Books. Here's Cecil Gershwin Palmer, the host, main character, narrator, is voiced by Cecil Baldwin.
The policeman in that intersection is not directing traffic. He's coding an urgent message to all of us. Welcome to Night Vale.
Ooh, it's kind of Twilight Zone, and we're in there very quickly. Julia Turner, what's succeeding in the huge podcast realm here? Or can you even pin it down? I mean, there's so many players. Sports are huge. Snooki has or is going to have her own, you know, podcast. Welcome to Night Vale is big. So are a lot of other things. Is there a pattern as to what succeeds here?
Well, I think one thing that's exciting about the podcast boom is that we're seeing an increase in the variety of types of forms that are successful. You know, one of the initial appeals of podcasting is that it was pretty lo-fi, low-tech, dudes talking in their garage, mm-hmm. I think, yep. is the stereotype of what the podcast was to start with. But as podcasting has attracted, you know, more sophisticated audio talent from radio primarily and other production realms, and also, as people have realized the difference between tune-in listening, where you're going to join a show midstream because you happen to be going to the car to get, you know, in the car to the grocery store to get milk at that moment, versus appointment listening. Hey, now's my dog walk, so I'm going to start this show. The possibilities for serial narrative, for, you know, old-fashioned, like, radio drama storytelling have begun to open up. And I actually think this is wide open territory. I mean, Night Vale is one of the early successes here, and obviously the success of Serial this past fall, that was a serialized crime story told over, you know, 10 or so episodes. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see people take advantage of that aspect of the form, the appointment listening ability with podcasts. But, you know, I think we're going to see much, much more of it. And Night Vale is really almost a mood piece. The first, you know, the first 10, 20 episodes are really almost indecipherable in terms of plot. And I think eventually they pull in more characters and it becomes more of a kind of plot-driven drama that you could imagine as a, you know, premium cable show or something. But really, at the beginning, it's almost just a, like, mood and soundscape, which is kind of crazy that it's so massively popular. And that's part of what's exciting about the medium is really strange, interesting, unexpected stuff, stuff that you just wouldn't find anywhere else can rise to the top.
Nick, what's the appetite out there or the appetites that you see as most notable in the world of podcast listeners? This kind of moody thing you might not have thought would have rocketed to the top of the heap, but it's been right up there for a long time. What are the appetites that podcasts appeal to?
It's incredibly diverse. There is a lot of kinds of appetites, and there's a lot of kinds of, you know, podcasting subcommunities that popped up. And I think all those subcommunities are feeding very different things mm-hmm. when it comes to sort of the listener-producer relationship. You know, on one hand, there are tons of wonderful GabFest style, and just, you know, to borrow a phrase that Slate uses for their conversational yeah. style podcasts, yeah. which really strike a chord, at least with people like me, and I think a lot of people who do sort of gravitate for more traditional radio sensibilities. It's you know, peeking into a much larger, much more informed conversation that I in my day-to-day life can have. At the same time, you also have really interesting experimental, not necessarily non-narrative, non-fiction journalism, but stuff like what Love and Radio is putting out, what Fugitive Waves is putting out. It's sort of really interesting experiments with the form, interesting experiments of storytelling. And that I think it's feeding into something a little bit more new. And so you have sort of, I mean, this is very much an emerging form. And this emerging form is sort of splitting multiple ways. And there's a lot of things to figure out. Which is what is so really interesting about when you ask about appetites. It's, a lot of it is unformed.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the podcast surge, more and more Americans getting their audio fix, stories, news, entertainment by podcast, and what that means for listeners, for listening, for audio, for radio, including public radio. Julia Turner is with us, editor-in-chief of Slate. Nicholas Kwa is here. His newsletter on podcasting is Hot Pod, out every week. Here's a clip from NPR's new podcast, Invisibilia, about the invisible forces that control human behavior. This episode looks at the idea of fear, and in this clip, neuroscientist is talking with the host Lulu Miller and Elise Spiegel about a woman who could not biologically experience fear.
At that point, I would say that she looked like a perfectly normal person. And she is a perfectly normal person, except for one particular problem.
The problem? The woman couldn't feel fear. Literally could not experience that emotion.
Fearless, that's the best way of describing it.
From Invisibilia. If that grabs you, it's all out there, ready for your listening anytime you like. Dan in Edmond, Oklahoma. Dan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Just wanted to say, you know, listen to podcasts every day. You know, it really kind of changed my life. I feel in a lot of ways. And, you know, I wanted to speak to it basically kind of as the quality of them getting so much better. I mean, we've talked a little bit about that. But, you know, you're talking about the ease of getting them, which obviously it's easy, but the quality has really improved. And I found it to be, you know, besides watching sporting events on television to be much more satisfying than anything else on television today.
And when you say it's changed your life, Dan, unpack that for us. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, mainly it's, you know, it's led me to more learning, to read more, and really to stop watching television, you know, which I think is healthier in a lot of ways.
When do you listen? What are you doing? And is it with earbuds in or in the car somehow? Or what are you up to?
Oh, usually, you know, it's anytime. You know, I mean, you can do it virtually anywhere. I've got multiple sets of headphones. I've got car jacks for, you know, to plug it into the car. I can plug it into, you know, my stereo at home. You know, it's, you know, really kind of universal. It goes with you.
And what do you like, Dan, among podcasts? What's some faves?
Well, I would say anything that NPR puts out is my first choice. But, you know, the regulars, I would say that Theory of Everything by Benjamin Walker is probably one of my favorites. Also like some throwbacks to some older things I used to listen to on AM, which was, you know, the Phil Henry Show and, you know, things like that. But try to always stream live over Wi-Fi, which is, you know, usually And then when I have to go out and about, that's when the podcast come into play.
Dan, I love it. Thanks for calling in from Oklahoma. Let's get one more right here. Marie in Columbia, South Carolina. Marie, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show, and yours is actually one that I listen to a lot, and I've been streaming you over my smartphone right now as I'm folding laundry.
Great. I love it.
But when we lived abroad in South Africa, bandwidth was really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we would do, any opportunity we got, we would download This American Life, as many as we could, and then listen to it while cooking dinner, and it kind of gave us a taste of home.
Yeah.
Since we couldn't look at YouTube or anything like that.
Yeah. And what else? So there's On Point, there's This American Life. What else is on your top list, Marie?
I've been listening. Well, I caught up on Serial, so that was a lot of fun. I listen to that kind of stuff when I'm doing things around the house, cleaning. Sometimes I'll carry it into my car, especially if I miss episodes of shows that I like on NPR.
And what have you been? What would you have been doing before during that time? Just thinking to yourself, or would have had a radio or a TV on in the background?
Maybe a radio. I don't have any TV in my house, so just listening to music. But it's nice to have something to focus on or have the storytelling, so then your mind is able to wander on that while you're doing other mindless tasks.
Yeah, Maria, I love your call as well. Thank you so much. Nicholas Kwa, what is podcast listening displacing? Or is it just taking over more hours in the day where people are letting their minds flow into this kind of disembodied audio space?
Okay, there are three ways to approach this. One, it's possibly displacing traditional terrestrial radio, largely because of this much larger media shift towards on-demand consumption mm-hmm. that we're seeing with in television. There's Netflix and there's Amazon Instant. And when it comes to music, it's more, you know, like Spotify, you know, as opposed to listening to the larger sort of stream from a broadcast. So on the one hand, there is that happening. And I do think that that shift is very much real. And we're in the early days of that. The second bit of narrative here is sort of filling up time otherwise, which otherwise would not have been filled in the first place. Like, you know, in the subway, you know, you could choose to read, you could choose to do a number of things, but you could also choose to listen to a podcast. So that ends up being part of a diet in that particular environment. And finally, the third narrative here is a bit more open. It's, I think if there are good enough content, and I think there will be great enough content on the scale and fervor of Serial, it will create like whole new sort of forms of listener behavior and places where people actually do consume a podcast.
I mean, forms of behavior like standing stock still in the middle of nowhere or on a street corner wrapped up in a drama that's going on in your mind. Serial was just huge. Last November, I think it hit 5 million downloads. Looked at an investigation of a 1999 murder in a Baltimore high school student. Her boyfriend, now serving still a life sentence for the crime, explored that for 12 weeks. Here's the host, Sarah Koenig.
For the last year, I've spent every working day trying to figure out where a high school kid was for an hour after school one day in 1999. Or if you want to get technical about it, and apparently I do, where a high school kid was for 21 minutes after school one day in 1999.
And boy, did we find out in great, great detail, more than you could ever imagine knowing about that. And Julia, people just loved it. What was it about Serial that sort of turned on the taps of give me more attention?
Well, I mean, Serial, for one thing, came out of the This American Life media empire, was produced by alums of that show, and got a bit of a boost, I think, from the sheer listening power of the mm-hmm. This American Life audience. I think there's a stamp, there's like a good housekeeping seal of approval.
Ira says it's good. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, and, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's a
yeah.
good vouch, right?
Yeah, he's
a good tastemaker, and it was an excellently produced show. Then I think also, you know, people like chat shows. I'm on a chat show. This is a chat show. It's nice to have people nattering in your head and keeping you company while you fold the laundry. But this was a drama. This was more mm-hmm. like something you'd see on television. This was more like a serialized entertainment with cliffhangers and what's going to happen next and who did it. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think the furor around and fervor around Serial resembled in a way the way people watched the HBO show True Detective earlier last year, where there were subreddits with people dedicated to trying to solve the mystery, and whether it was fictional or non, you know, there was a similar kind of culture of obsession around it, which I think is easier to develop with a serialized narrative rather than just kind of a like, all right, we're going to discuss a, you know, a movie this week.
Yeah, and it got deep in a hurry and went on for a long time. Brooke and Hilton Head, Island, South Carolina. Brooke, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment on, I'm somewhat new to the talk radio and podcast area, but I listened to the first podcast of Invisibilia, and the only thing I can say is it was awesome. It was like reading a good novel, starting to read a book that I like couldn't wait until the next chapter that I could get to, you know. And so I guess, you know, as an avid reader who obviously I can't read while I drive and read while I'm working, things like that, I just found that I got the same types of emotions, and I just thought that it was awesome. It was like reading a great book.
So do you think, or have you already integrated more listening hours a day or a week into your life because of podcasts, Brooke?
Definitely. In fact, I have it on my phone. I was listening to it on my phone. I would carry it in from the car and put it on my, you know, speakers inside my house. And basically, you know, instead of coming home and turning on the TV, I was, you know, pretty much just keeping my phone with me. And and whether it be Invisibilia was the first kind of story, I guess, type podcast, but even NPR, you know, this is the first time in my life I've ever really listened to something like On Point, things like that. And so for about 8 months now, I've been listening every morning, and I definitely have increased like the number of hours in my week that I listen. I mean, I would say I listen, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours a week pretty consistently. And Invisibilia was just kind of that first, like, wow, this is a really fascinating, thought-provoking subject,
yeah.
You know. And so I haven't had a chance to listen to the next episode, but I can't wait.
Brooke, we're very glad to be there with you. It's just beguiling, it's somehow charming to be there with people all over the place, and they're doing all kinds of things in this very intimate way. You know, Nick Quab, years ago, I got into a jag for a while of audiobooks, and where every time I was in the car, I had a great book on. And for, I don't know, a year or two, it was nonstop, and I was absolutely enthralled with it. And then one day I woke up and thought, you know, I'm listening to other stuff too much. I want to have the thoughts inside my own mind. I'm done with this. Do you think we're changing human behavior so that we're just going to want that novel in our mind, that story in our head more than we used to? Or is there a gag reflex at some point when people say, all right, enough already. I'm podcasting too many hours a day. Let me back to my own stream of consciousness.
Man, that's a good question. I think it's very much the same thing as when you consume other kinds of things. I used to, and I still do, watch a tremendous amount of television. But the difference there is that I actually have to sit down and commit my experience and my time and my attention to it. At some point, you know, your brain does hit a saturation point, and I have experienced that with listening to music and to podcasts. I think, you know, the question there is, you know, is this particular distribution form of content affecting a human behavior? It's very much like the question of, is technology in general affecting human behavior? And the answer is yes, probably, but we don't really know how. And that isn't really the important question anyway.
Because we roll on and there's going to be a lot of listening no matter what happens. You've given us a list of some of your favorites, Nick. Help us in here. What do you really like? What's at the top of your podcast list?
So I have lots of favorites, and the recommendations that I filed, these aren't necessarily like super favorites, but what I think are representative mm-hmm. of the form and what makes it really interesting. The first one I want to sort of really talk about is Song Exploder.
Song Exploder, okay.
Yeah, which comes off the Maximum Fun Network. It's really, really good.
I've got a clip from it. Tell us about it. What is Song Exploder?
So Song Exploder is you know, the host, Ricky Schreier, I'm going to butcher his name, never mind. It's a show in which a musician is interviewed and really takes you through the construction of a song. And it's the kind of show that can sort of really only exist as a podcast or only be really effective as something that's on-demand audio. It's really small, it's really intimate, it's really precise. And this is wonderful listening.
I've got just a little bit here. In this clip, guitarist Wes Mingus explains how the beat was assembled on the Ghostface Killah song, The Battlefield.
There was a certain sort of chord structure and movement in the original gospel recordings. What we decided to do is just dumb it down, keep it Wu-Tang, and just rock on just one note. I played the bass on it, rock it. Dum, 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 dum.
It's cool. I can see why you'd like that. The breaking down of a piece of music in that way. Pretty cool. I mean, we do elements of that right here in music shows on Point. But with the podcast, of course, you can do all kinds of production on that as well. Julia, this one, Song Exploder, comes from the Maximum Fun Network. What about networks out there? There's lots of people looking to be like the next big purveyor or purveyors of offerings, the same way ABC, NBC, CBS have been on television. Is that working, Julia?
I think the jury's out, but I think a lot of people are making bets in this direction because one of the things that's tricky about podcasts is discovery, right? If you're an Ira Glass anointed podcaster, you can get a big listenership for your show in the first months. But as the space gets more crowded and more established, magazines and brands and other outlets launch shows, it can be harder for the classic two guys in the garage model to break in, I think, and, you know, get cross-promoted on other shows. But, of course, the other big podcast launch of last fall from the This American Life Alumni Network was Startup, launched by Alex Bloomberg. And it's basically a business podcast about starting a business, and the business that's being started is Bloomberg's new podcasting network. So anyone who's interested in the viability of podcasting networks can certainly listen to that and get a sense of the investor interest. And it's strong, at least in their instance. So I think we'll see a lot more of them.
Trying to launch a podcast network and at the same time making a podcast about trying to launch a podcast network. Here's a little bit. This is Alex Bloomberg's podcast Startup. Here's a clip where he's struggling through a pitch to a big-time Silicon Valley investor, Chris Sacca, who Alex wants to invest in his company.
What you haven't given me is the outline of your story, right? Uh-huh. If I were calling an Uber right now and it said it's going to be here in 2 minutes and that was all the time you had, What are you doing?
So I'm making a network of digital podcasts that we will monetize, that is going to meet. Sorry.
Not his best presentation, maybe, but there's a startup from Gimlet Media. Nick, how about it? I mean, CBS, ABC, NBC, big networks in television, NPR, big network in radio. What do you think of the future of the networks in the podcasting universe?
I'm cautiously optimistic, but I am still very optimistic. I think, so the best way to think about it is just remember that podcasts, that's a distribution method. It's not. There's nothing to say about the kind of shows that can exist. It's nothing to say about the kind of content that can be produced. The question really is, how are we going to get audio from point A to point B? And, you know, when you look at a sort of larger scale of movements in digital media in general, I'm pretty bullish that, you know, podcasts will be a thing that will exist 10, 20 years from now and be very strong and robust. But the question is about profitability, about whether it ever can reach the heights of, you know, where premium cable is now, where big movie studios are now. That is a much more interesting question, and that's a much more tougher question. But in general, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen.
No doubt. At the same time, if you've got so much content out there, how does any one network hold the attention of enough people? I mean, it wouldn't be hard to have already thousands of podcasts or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands.
So the two directions it is. One, you know, it's up to the networks and it's up to the people who produce podcasts to figure out good sort of quote-unquote marketing methods or just sort of gatekeeping cultural curation methods. Content discovery is still a major problem. And I do think it's one of the like sort of last major barriers to really sort of helping this entire industry grow. On the other hand, there's also, you know, I think about the beginnings of film or the beginnings of, say, even video games. There has to be sort of a critical class that comes up and to find a way to, you know, participate in the, you know, distribution of that medium.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the podcast surge. Lots and lots of people, 40 million maybe now. Of course, it's not the 250 million that listen to radio in the United States, but it's a lot, and it's growing 25% or more per year, changing the way we interact with audio, the way we interact with radio. Julia Turner is with us, editor-in-chief at Slate. They've been very active in the podcasting arena. Nicholas Kwa is with us from New York. He writes, writer of the weekly newsletter Hot Pod, all about podcasts. Lots of people kicking in here from all over the place. Benson Yee gives us his top lineup. On Point, right at the top. We love that. Then This American Life, Invisibilia, Death, Sex, and Money, The Savage Lovecast. You can find it all out there. Here's Nitish writes, an On Point listener says, "Hi there from India. I've been a regular listener of NPR, both online and podcast." Hey, you can do it just anywhere. Here's a clip from the podcast WTF with Marc Maron. Long, often revealing interviews with comedians, celebrities recorded in his garage. This clip is from his interview with comedian Louis C.K. from October back in 2010. In December, Slate, Julia's outfit, chose this two-part episode as the best podcast episode ever. Here's a clip where Louis C.K. and Marc Maron talk about their long, rocky friendship and their struggles to communicate with one another.
You know, our friendship faded away at some point, and I had time when I was writing you emails to connect with you personally.
Yeah.
And you were ignored me.
Really?
Yeah, for a long time. For, I don't know, over a year.
Really?
Longer than that, yeah. Ugh. You just wouldn't answer me, and I would write emails that said, "I'm not sure why you're not writing me back, but I'm going to persist because our friendship goes back far enough."
Right, I remember that.
Saving.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't answer me.
Among the very best, says Slate. They're from WTF with Marc Maron. Brianne in New Orleans. Brianne, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that I end up taking a lot of long drives, 12, 16-hour drives, and I love having podcasts because I don't have to worry about finding the radio station or the NPR station or whatever, or a news station. I can just keep listening no matter what radio signal that I'm getting to. That, and with work, it makes it so that I can listen to something and I don't have to worry about stuff. And there's such a breadth of stuff that's out there. I mean, the BBC NewsHour has one. The White House has a podcast. I love Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yep.
Naked Scientists out of Open University. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, because I never know when I'm going to actually be able to listen to it. I love being able to listen to it after.
Yeah, and you've got your own stash. You're not dependent on anybody's signal fading in and out as you cross the country. Brianne, thanks for calling. Julia, Nick, stand by. Michael Manus joins us right now. He's innovator in residence with the Digital Initiative at Harvard Business School. Was with the Knight Foundation before, VP of Journalism and Media Innovation there. Michael Manus, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Hi.
Hi. Anybody in terrestrial radio has to look at this and wonder, you know, where does this go? What does all this mean for public broadcasting? Let's say for NPR, Michael.
Sure. So I think one of the things that you've already heard from your callers is the rise of this around mobile and their ability to choose what's going on. And I think at first, the large brands that you have that are on NPR have an advantage that tends to fade away and slip away as there's more proliferation and easier to get content that you want. And we know that the seeds of your disruption and your potential destruction are sown well before you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's important about this, I think, is a lot of this has been internet resistant because people are largely consuming in traffic, in their cars, on their way to work. But
on a radio, traditionally.
That's right. Exactly. But by 2016, about 12% of cars will have internet streaming available. And by 2020, the estimate 90% of cars will have streaming. So that means that people can dial in whatever they want with a very probably easy user interface, which that begins to really change the game.
I'm looking here at the top podcasts of iTunes as of yesterday, and 9 out of the top 15 are public radio based. I guess that's your sort of established player advantage. What do you see happening over time? Does public broadcasting migrate into this arena successfully? Does it matter whether it does or not, Michael?
Well, I think it's, you see the same things that we've seen around TV. It's a good analog to this, which is that you still have big broadcasters doing things. But at the same time, you have something like The Walking Dead coming up and challenging those kind of superiorities that they've had in the past. And so I think it ultimately anything that democratizes the way that people can approach information and provide it is a good thing. The key is making sure there's the same type of quality and diversity of content that you can find.
Julia, what do you see coming down the road? You know, there was a time on radio you had limited bandwidth. Public radio stood out because it wasn't just a top 40 or just sort of aggressive in-your-face talk. You could get a kind of depth and a kind of substance there you couldn't get elsewhere. will it be distinguished in the podcast future where everything is possible all the time?
I'm really excited about the podcast future because I think when you throw off the bounds of the radio clock and needing to break for news every so often and, okay, we've got another show coming up, you create the opportunity for really arresting, groundbreaking audio experiences. Part of why we named that interview between Marc Maron and Louis C.K. the best podcast of all time. We made a list of the top 25, which is sort of a silly exercise in a way, but we thought it would be fun to highlight individual episodes. You know, that was a two-hour-long conversation between old friends who both happened to be semi-famous, who'd grown estranged, and worked out over audio what had happened between them and made up and made peace. And it was like an emotionally cathartic and moving and sort of voyeuristically fascinating if you're interested in modern comedy, and also just emotionally revealing, raw, honest conversation of the sort that even if you can get flashes of that in like a 20-minute set before the ad break, it's hard to find space for that, I think, within the confines of a more traditional unbounded medium like radio. And I think the flexibility and fluidity of the medium allows for scruffiness, for looseness, for jocularity, for all kinds of tones and tenors that are less common and really exciting to listeners as they explore.
Michael, how do you think radio broadcasters are doing with their effort to be players in this arena so far?
Well, I think Invisibilia is a good first step on these. But what we know is it's a lot easier to be a digital company that starts producing media content than it is to be an analog content producer wrestling down digital. Mm-hmm. So there's some natural advantages that you have when you're starting a digital where you're not beholden to any community that you've had before. You don't have to pay attention to the clock. You don't have to worry about hitting those specific times and the investment that takes. So that moment is a real powerful equalizer to people who want to come in on it. So for very little money, you could start a podcast. Now, at the same time, there's not a lot of money to make in it yet. But that's the thing that I think is really startling on it, is that you'll have to figure out if you're a traditional radio broadcaster, how you start spinning up and experimenting and making sure those things continue and letting loose on some things that so you're not so beholden to the traditional way you've been producing content.
Nick Kwa, here's the CEO of NPR, Jarl Mohn, saying, this is last fall, digital is our present. It's also our future. We must be where our audiences are. What do you see coming for public broadcasting, Nick? Does it just dissolve away into the world of a million podcasts, or does it continue to have a singular role?
I don't think it's going to dissolve, but it's probably going to get some sort of market share being challenged. I don't particularly think anything ever dies. And I'm trying to think, I do try to think through this, and it kind of, I ask myself, where's ABC right now? Where's CBS right now? Where's PBS right now compared to where they were 20 years ago? They're still there, but they hold, a little bit less of the sort of cultural influence. And it really does depend on kind of the metrics you're looking at. So, nothing ever goes away, I feel. And I don't think public radio, that's ever going to happen to public radio as well.
I mean, people are out there working on it. My host station, WBUR, big public radio station, just has come out with a new podcast, Dear Sugar. Listeners write in with their troubles, and author Steve Allman and Cheryl Strait of Wild fame give advice. Here's Steve Allman's advice to a woman addicted to painkillers and hiding that addiction from her husband, Dear Sugar.
She needs to come clean with him, but she needs to do the fundamental work of facing that she's been dishonest with herself, mm-hmm. and starting to show real steps in terms of getting it taken care of, going to a doctor. So she doesn't just say to him, here's the situation and I've done nothing about it, no self-reflection.
Dear Sugar, working on a kind of Dear Abby angle there. Joel in Somerville, Massachusetts. Joel, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I got so excited about podcasts, I started one myself.
Great. How's it going?
It's going great. It's been about a year. I do have a day job. I'm a television producer, and I have a television production company here in Somerville.
Okay.
But I can do this for almost no money. I am trying to do something that is intimate, something I'm basically doing interviews with people I know, people in my field, people who are behind the scenes, television and media people experiencing the same transition in our industry that I am. And, you know, I'm trying to make it as honest and as intimate as possible. I have about 200 listeners per episode right now.
Okay.
Now I'm trying to figure out, can I make any money at this? Or is this just going to be purely a labor of love?
Let us get some advice from our panel here. Julia, what do you think? Can Joel, he's got 200 listeners, it's a labor of love. Can it be more than that?
Well, I think you need to start growing your audience a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we part of why we've stuck with podcasting now for nearly 10 years is that we're finding there's a real business model here, and we've had a lot of success financially. And I actually think that's one thing that's interesting about the shift from public broadcasting to podcasting is that in some ways the, you know, rules and conventions around monetizing audio outside of the public radio space are a little bit looser and allow for a bit more innovation. So, you know, on Startup, for example, Alex Blumberg is reading the ads himself. He's doing little produced host read segments where he interviews people who work at the companies that sponsor the show. That's something that would be sort of frowned on in a more conservative environment like public radio, but he's very clear about what's the ad and what's not. And, you know, it seems like it's working for him so far. At least he's experimenting in a way that's proving lucrative for the moment. But, you know, we're finding that our advertisers, you know, some of the classic advertisers you hear all over podcasting, things like MailChimp and Squarespace, but also some big, larger corporate brands. We've had advertising deals with GE and Acura are really drawn to podcasting because they're drawn to that sense of engagement. People who listen to the weekly culture show I do, they feel like they know me. They feel like they have a standing date with me on Wednesday mornings to hear what me and our film critic and our literary critic have to say about what's going on in culture that week. They're bummed if the show is late. Mm-hmm. They email us and say, where is it? They email from all over the world and say, Julia, I can't believe what you said about Beyonce. You're totally wrong. They feel like they're having a conversation with us. It's really intimate. It's engaged. It's hours a week. And when I, you know, interrupt the show and say, hey, here, you know, let's just pause for a moment for a word from our sponsor, they listen to that rather than skipping past it or, you know, just like blip, blip, blipping forward on TiVo.
But how is that different from, I mean, we got a talk show right here, gobs of people engaged, people listening all over the place, responding, you know, lots of ways. Feeling that sense of connection. Is the engagement necessarily different from that in a podcast?
I think the fact that it's mobile makes it different.
Radio's mobile.
Well, but it's not in your pocket, right? If you have the podcast
on your smartphone,
if you
want to do it that way.
Well, once it came off radio and became digital, right? Yeah, I mean, that's the digital version of radio. Yeah. And once it's in your pocket, it can follow you anywhere. I mean, it can follow you into the kitchen. It comes with you. It makes... it seems as though the podcast you're listening to are your pals, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that intimacy and engagement really runs counter to some of the other trends that advertisers are seeing right now. You know, a lot of sites online are boasting about huge audience growth driven by social media, driven by Facebook and Twitter and other outlets like that. And a lot of those big audiences are, you know, 50 million people came to your site, but a lot of those people only came once for 45 seconds because they saw a link on Facebook. Whereas people, you know, a recent study showed that a lot of people who listen to podcasts, 20% of them listen to six or more per week. And if you think the average podcast is about half an hour, the sheer chunk of listening time that that represents is enormous. And so the engagement with the medium is deep.
Nick Kwa, what's your sense? Looking forward, you know the huge world of podcasts, such a big universe. How much of that is going to be economically viable? How much is, as with our caller from Somerville, Massachusetts, going to be a labor of love?
I think, again, I've always perceived this form to be one very much in emergent growth. It really depends on the timeline you're looking at. Over the next 2 years, I anticipate that much larger digital media publishers and sort of much larger sort of corporations that are putting out media will adopt the form. And then there you'll see the business model exist as part of a larger ecosystem. But over the next 5-10, I think I do believe we will be able to see fully self-sustaining podcast networks. This particular business model can exist on its own. But it's going to take a bit of time, and it's also going to take a bit of more infrastructure building from technology end, and a lot more sort of culture building. Because the big problem from my perspective is that it's very much seen as a niche product, and that just takes a lot of conversation. It takes a lot of good work, and also takes a lot of good timing. And I think that's, you know, again, I've been saying this all along, but I think it's it's bound to happen, but it's going to be slow.
Michael, it'll bring us a lot of talk, a lot of drama, a lot of really interesting conversations. Will it bring us the news itself, the world of podcasting?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't think we know the answer to that yet. You know, the need for having breaking news and the kind of thing that drives a lot of the current terrestrial broadcast, where you tune in when something's happening, that time shift that podcast has until streaming's immediate and you have a lot of things going on and it's really easy to stream. I think that's going to be what we're waiting for. And then we're hoping that there's going to be viable models that provide quality news as well.
Hoping, waiting, and a lot happening right now. Ears all over the country, all over the world tuned in to this huge gusher of podcasts. We're happy to be right in the thick of it. It's pretty exciting. Michael Maness, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
Innovator in Residence with the Digital Initiative at Harvard Business School, and Nick Kwa with Hot Pod, the weekly podcast newsletter. Nicholas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Julia Turner, editor-in-chief at Slate. Good luck with all your podcasts, Julia. Rock on.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.